Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Good morning. I'm Glenn Moberg, and for 15 years, I've been starting the Route 51 show that way on Wisconsin Public Radio. But today, I'm in a different role. I'm the guest on my own radio show, which is being hosted by our executive producer, Rick Ryer. Rick and I have worked really hard through the years to make Route 51 what it is today, an eclectic, entertaining, and influential mix of the people, places, and politics that make North Central Wisconsin special. We're going to be looking back at some of those moments from the past 15 years, some of our favorite interviews, debate segments, and feature stories, and you'll also hear a little bit of my original music, including this song that I wrote 10 years ago called When the Darkness Sets In.
Is hard and the air is cold. My bones are aching and I'm feeling old. The summer is over before it begins, and I'm melancholy as the darkness sets in. When the darkness sets in, days are getting shorter. When the darkness sets in, nights are getting longer. Flowers in your garden wither and die, and the icy north wind just spits in your eye. In the springtime, the rain makes the air smell like worms. Your blade hits the soil, and the dark earth it turns. The robins and the warblers make a terrible din, but they've all flown south when the darkness sets in. Tree frogs of summer serenade the moon, and when the sun shines hot, I dive with the loons. I lather on lotion and still burn my skin, but I'm a whiter shade of pale when the darkness sets in. When the darkness sets in, days are getting shorter. When the darkness sets in, nights are getting longer. Flowers in your garden wither and die, and the icy north wind just spits in your eye. Leaves of autumn are raked and burned, while the farmer figures out what he's spent and he's earned. On Thanksgiving Day, you meet with your kin, but they've all gone home when the darkness sets in. The seasons go, they move by so fast and I move so slow. There's a dark hole that waits me, and when it's filled in, it'll be the last time that the darkness sets in. When the darkness sets in, days are getting shorter. When the darkness sets in, nights are getting longer. Flowers in your garden wither and die, and the icy north wind just spits in your eye.
When the Darkness Sets In, Glenn Moberg, original song. You wrote that 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think a little more than 10 years ago. The title came from a friend of mine and a guest on this show, Bill Berry, the journalist who works out of Stevens Point. And we were working together on an event called the Jam for Johnny in memory of Johnny Ulrich, who was an entrepreneur and a guy who was really plugged into the music scene, particularly the bluegrass music scene in North Central Wisconsin, and the civil rights movement too. And he was working in that capacity in the city of Chicago, and he was shot and killed trying to stop an armed robbery at a cab stand. So he saved some lives, and his own life went very quickly at that moment. And Bill and I worked on this fundraiser. The money we raised ended up going to the John W. Ulrich Foundation for the Performing Arts. It ended up being the sound system that's on the 400 block right now in downtown Wausau. And Bill just happened to mention in passing that, you know, it was getting on fall and the days were getting shorter, and a lot of people get depressed this year. This Time of the Year When the Darkness Sets In. I thought, that's the title of a country and western song. So that's some of the background information to that. And it is about the changing seasons and the cycle of life, and it's about life and death on a personal level as well.
Life and death on a personal level. This past fall, you were diagnosed with cancer. And some would say that for you, the darkness has set in, but your outlook is different than, is, I would say, inspirational right now. What does the song mean to you right now, today, and how has the cancer influenced your perspective on life?
Well, it's terminal stomach cancer that I have. They can't fix it. They can prolong my life, they think, with chemotherapy. Radiation doesn't work, and there's no way they can do surgery on it, and it has spread. And they've given me anywhere from 3 months to maybe a year, maybe a few years to live. And, in terms of the song, I think it's self-explanatory. The seasons change. We're all part of a cycle of life on this planet. None of us gets out of here alive, and death is with us at all time. And I've been given the blessing and the curse of having kind of an idea of when I'm going to shuffle off this mortal coil. But all of us are going to go at one time or another. And, Rick, you know this is true. You could die before I do.
Right.
You know, anything can happen. And if I could pass along one message to people, which is something that I've thought about quite a bit since the diagnosis, is treat every day that you're on this earth like it could be your last day. Be nice to people. If you love somebody, let them know that you love them. Do nice things for folks, and be careful when you're on the internet. If you've got a nasty email or a nasty response that you want to send somebody, don't do it unless it's something that you would say to that person face to face. And I think we could all use a lot of civility in our day-to-day interactions. And that's actually been the focus of my career in broadcasting, is the idea of civility, and it's certainly been the focus of the Route 51 show.
Well, that's one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we were able to bring across on Route 51 every single week since we started the program back in 2004. And we'll get to that in a little while yet this morning. But I just wanted to ask, you kind of answered, or I should say you did answer this already, but in a different way. A lot of people today take their lives on this earth for granted. And what other advice would you give them beyond what you've just said?
Well, if you're a young person, or I guess this applies to anybody, it's your own life. You know, go out and live it. Do what inspires you. If you're a young person just starting out, and you want to be an artist or a musician or something else, don't listen to people who tell you that you'll never make it. Because if you work hard enough and you're inspired enough by what you do, You might very well make a living at it, and if that's the case, you'll never work a day in your life. Just realize that it is your life. You're put on this earth for a purpose. Nothing goes away. I really believe that everything that's ever happened still exists. Everything that's happening now will continue to exist forever. The future has happened, and it's all in God's consciousness. Nothing goes away, so make the most of it while you're here.
Glenn, we really appreciate you being here in the studio with us today on your program, as the guest, as you said at the beginning of the program. Listeners, you can join us, too, by calling if you have a question for Glenn or a comment that you'd like to leave for him at 800-780-9742. Again, that phone number is 1-800-780-9742. And we're also streaming this program on the web. You can find that link at our website, wpr.org/route51. Again, wpr.org/route51. Take us back, Glenn, to when you came to Wausau and your work at WSAW-TV and WALW-TV and how you landed here at WPR.
Well, my career has taken me to a lot of places. I actually started in the 1970s as a morning host and a disc jockey for a very progressive rock station called The Fox in Elgin, Illinois. If you grew up in Chicago at the time, chances are you know what I'm talking about. We had 10,000 record albums. I could play anything I wanted to. I had my picture taken with Bob Marley and Waylon Jennings, which gives you an idea of how diverse the formatting was at that station. Then I ended up creating a cable television news department for the Centel Company in the western suburbs of Chicago. And we started that basically from scratch and built it up into a nightly news department where we had a weekly call-in show very similar to Route 51. And I had a staff of 12 people, and we covered the news in the western suburbs. Did that for 10 years. My focus then, as it has been recently and throughout my life, we did a lot of stories about the environment, protecting the environment, and also stories on racism, bigotry, and inclusion. Those are the two main focuses of what I've done through my life. And one of the things I'm proudest of there is we were able to get a radioactive waste dump cleaned up in the city of West Chicago by putting pressure on the Kerr-McGee Company and bringing them together, top executives with the mayor and people from the activist groups who opposed it, sitting them down in one room, and they worked things out live on television. But I went from there to being a television reporter for Fox News in downtown Chicago. And I got to cover politics, which I loved, covering Illinois politics. There's nothing like it. Covered the shenanigans going on in Springfield, the state capital. They actually had me go out and cover a prison riot in Lucasville, Ohio. But a lot of what I did there was crime stories, day after day after day. And it wasn't just Fox. All of the big city news departments are the same way. You've got video that comes in the night before of a poor kid lying in a pool of blood trying to be resuscitated. And your job the next day is to go knock on the family's door, talk to the parents, try to get a picture from them, try to get an interview with them. They end up more often than not breaking down into tears, and then that all gets packaged as entertainment, really, for the evening news. And it's a very jaundiced, cynical thing that we do in television news today too often. And that was the impetus of why I wanted to move up here when I was given a chance to do so. I wanted to get away from that, and I wanted to be put in a situation where I could cover the news in a way that was less one-sided and in which I could reflect on some of the good things people are doing.
Well, when you were in Chicago reporting on crime, it was a daily thing. It was an hourly thing at times, too, in Chicago. But when you came here to Wisconsin Public Radio, you also covered crime from a slightly different perspective. How is that different?
Well, the difference is that we only cover crime if there's a really good underlying reason for us to do so. If it's a big enough story, you have to cover it. But we don't chase ambulances. We don't go after fires. We don't go after car accidents. I don't have a police scanner that I have to listen to. But there are times when you have to cover a crime story. And one of the ones that stuck out in my mind was the situation up in Crandon, Wisconsin, several years ago, in which a young cop lost self-control and ended up turning on six of his very good friends, shot and killed them, and then he committed suicide. So I was up there within a couple of hours of the incident. I was up there day after day, you know, as the story progressed. And then we went back a year later when they tore down the house where the event took place. And I was able to put that together into a feature story, which gives you an idea of how an incident like that impacts the people around you.
On your side. More than 300 people stood in the pouring rain on the streets of this small Northwoods community, staring for the last time at the yellow wood frame house that had darkened their lives.
I don't come by here unless I have to.
Lee Smith was able to muster a smile as she remembered her son Aaron and his silly nickname, Chunk.
Just looking at his pictures when he was little, he was a chunk. Big cheeks, you know, little chunky. But, you know, after he got out of high school, he grew up, he got tall.
Aaron Smith was one of six young people who lost their lives that terrible night in October, gunned down by an off-duty police officer they had considered one of their own. Lee Smith looked again at the house where it happened.
You know, once the house is gone, we can maybe move forward a little bit. We're never going to get over it, but we have to do what we have to do.
Fred Ackley of the Mole Lake Chippewa looked at the sky and said that the Great Spirit was crying. Pastor Bill Farr was also choking back tears.
Remember their laughter. Remember their life. And as this house is demolished tomorrow, we will chase the black cloud of darkness and despair surrounding it away.
On Saturday morning, the house would be gone, to be replaced by a memorial for the six young people who took a part of this close-knit community with them. In Crandon, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Glenn, how has news coverage changed over the years from your perspective?
Well, I think it's become more sensational in a lot of ways, but the biggest change has been in technology and specifically the internet. The fact that everybody now has a platform. There are no standards anymore. When the two of us were young growing up, we had ABC, CBS, and NBC, the three main television stations. You had Walter Cronkite on. And there were standards that were in place for journalists, standards that that if you were a reporter at those stations, you had to follow them. And the most important of those standards is it the truth? Is it something that can be backed up by facts? And it's gotten to the point now where with the internet and unfortunately with some of the public stands taken by political leaders, including the President of the United States, it's almost as though the truth doesn't matter anymore. You know, as a journalist, the most important thing is, do I know something is true? My standard determining that is the standard that's used in the laboratory and also the courtroom, empirical evidence, science. And in the courtroom, is there evidence to indicate that somebody actually committed the crime? So that's why you'll hear me talk about climate change on the Route 51 show and in our packages without acting like there's a lot of debate over whether or not it's true. It is true. It's been verified by scientists. You can see it all around you. It's happening right now. And this lack of respect for the truth and for science and the fact that now everybody seems to have their own opinion, which is as good as anyone else's opinion, that's been the biggest change that I've seen. It's been a change for the worse.
Over the years, you've covered a lot of issues and events from around the region. And some of those stories and pieces really have been packed with emotion, raw emotion. Tell us about a particular piece that you did from Neillsville not too long ago.
Well, there's a holy place in Neillsville called the High Ground, which is where wounded warriors, where people who have fought, people who know others who have fought and paid the ultimate price protecting our freedom, can get together and make sure that the memories of those who died will never go away. And there was an event at the High Ground in Neillsville that was particularly poignant. And like I often do with my stories, as much as possible, I let the sound at that event tell the story. Because what was happening with that sound, with the words of the soldiers, and with the bell that kept ringing in memory of these wounded warriors, that was more poignant than anything that I could have said with my own words.
It is the opening day of Operation Persian Gulf Welcome Home.
We remember the Wisconsin men and women killed in Iraq. Ryan P. Long.
On high ground, flanked by dozens of American flags, the veterans salute and shout present as the names are read of those who lost their lives in the region's many conflicts.
Charles A. Kaufman.
Charles Kaufman died at the age of 20 on June 26, 2005.
It was a convoy of Humvees, and there was a roadside bomb in the cement.
His mother, Celeste Kaufman, says she wonders what Charles would be doing now.
He had just a great smile. I've been told he was killed instantly, which I find comfort in that, because I never wanted him to suffer.
She is now a volunteer at the High Ground.
The veterans of past, present, and future are never forgotten here. Their families and friends are never forgotten here.
Ryan D. Chopek.
It is almost 10 years to the day since Iraq veteran Brian Chopek last spoke to his son Ryan, who had followed him overseas.
He turned 20 on June 1st of 2006. His unit was only going to be in country another couple weeks. They came home, I think it was 2 days after he was buried, and I was there at Volk Field to greet them. I just felt I had to be there.
He says at the High Ground, his son's sacrifice and his service are respected.
I have been called a baby killer. Well, I was in downtown Madison on State Street in uniform.
Chopek remembers a scene from the movie The Hurt Locker, which shows the internal struggle combat veterans can face when they return home.
1 minute, you're in a wreck. You're getting shot at. And the next minute, you're in the cereal aisle looking at a box of cereal for your kids. I can't help but think that there have been so many that have had to deal with that.
Andrew Halverson.
J.R. Nichols stands in front of the memorial he built, a 120-foot wall of remembrance containing the names of all those killed in the war on terror.
From the bombing of the barracks in Beirut, Lebanon in 1983 to current day. How else do you say thank you?
Nichols, a civilian, worries about those described as missing in America, veterans suffering from depression and post-traumatic stress.
22 suicides a day. We're not taking care of their hidden wounds. We're not helping them.
Richard J. Nelson.
Present.
There is a giant bootprint at the High Ground, a walkthrough monument that contains three statues. One of them is a serviceman staring into space. Sculptor Michael Martino calls it the thinker.
It could be PTSD. It could be just bad memories. It could be lost friends. It could be family issues. It could be not having a job. All of those things that a vet has to deal with. The thousand-mile stare.
Tracy Lynn Alger.
Present.
The High Ground's volunteer general, Kirk Rodman, served when Eisenhower was president. At 82, he is helping troubled veterans and trying to reach the next generation of soldiers.
I talked to a lot of kids, and my goal is to touch that one kid so when he has to push the button, he won't do it. So my kids will be safe.
All present and accounted for, sir.
On this day, all of the Persian Gulf veterans are present and accounted for at the High Ground, even those who are only here in spirit. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News.
You're listening to Route 51 with our special guest, Glenn Moberg. Today, I'm Rick Ryer. When we return, we'll take a ride back to when this program began and clips from some of Glenn's favorite moments. There's room for your questions as well. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. Again, that's 800-780-9742. Or you can send us an email at route51@wpr.org. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah, this is a tune called Weary Bones.
All right, let's hear it.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
Wisconsin Public Radio is proud to sponsor the Central Rivers Farm Shed Local Food Fair Saturday, February 9th from 11 until 3 at Century World in Stevens Point. The local food fair features a potato-themed farm-to-fork chef competition and a marketplace with more than 70 local farm, business, and educational organization exhibitors and vendors. More information at WPR.org/central.
Yesterday I wasted away. I don't know what tomorrow will bring. Now that I find you out of my mind, I can make it to the end of the day.
Nashville recording artist Jerry Schmidt with Glenn Moberg on Route 51. This is a special edition of Route 51 with Glenn as our guest today. I'm Rick Ryer. You can join the conversation as well at 800-780-9742. Tell us a little bit about that experience with Jerry.
Oh, I love Jerry. He's about as real as it gets. Boy, who grew up in north central Wisconsin, and that song that you just heard, I Don't Hurt As Much As I Used To, ended up being number one on the country roots charts. And as we often do on Route 51, we not only talk about politics, but we also talk about the arts and music. And we have musicians who come into our studio and play their music live. And in this case, it was just Jerry and me sitting down together with our guitars and a couple of microphones. And, you know, that to me is what makes this radio show special. And incidentally, I will be playing with Jerry and with John Altenberg, who wrote the Route 51 theme, this coming Saturday, February 9th, at the Mosinee Brewing Company. It's from 7 to 11 p.m., 401 4th Street. So I'm really looking forward to that. Jerry asked me if I'd like to sit in, and I'm honored to do it.
That's terrific. And Glenn, we have a caller on the line. Ned from Lake DeBay would like to talk with you. Ned.
Yes. First, I'd like to thank Glenn for really interesting programs on Route 51. They've been outstanding for at least 15 years, and I've called in a number of times over these years, and I've really enjoyed them thoroughly. And I wanted to get back to one of his comments from earlier in today's program. There are far too many people that consider a comment on one side of an issue, and then they hear someone on the opposite side of the issue, and then they come to the conclusion that there's no consensus and they're all equal. And after teaching 26 years at UWMC, I tried to teach my students to consider the credentials of who is speaking or communicating electronically. And it's so important that we do consider, has this person devoted decades of their life and thoroughly studied the issue, or are they just spouting off their opinion on the other side of an issue? And a good case is the case for climate change.
Well, Ned, that's something that I did bring up in the first segment, and I appreciate your words. I think they're right on. I appreciate you listening for the past 15 years, and God bless you.
Thank you very much, and God bless you too.
Thanks for the call, Ned. Back in 2004, this program began, and it debuted in a rather big way. Tell us about that, Glenn.
We had a debate that was unlike anything that I have ever seen before, or I'd be willing to bet that we will ever see again in this era in which politicians are handled and controlled, and their political liaisons do everything they can to make sure that they're not going to be put in a situation where they might actually have to answer questions or have their feet held to the fire. We had an incumbent U.S. Senator, Russ Feingold, a Democrat, and then his Republican opponent, Tim Michaels. And the debate was live, and we sat them at a small table right in the middle of the stage. And these two guys were so close together that their shirt sleeves were touching one another. And then I put myself way off on the corner of the stage, and I think I asked one question to start the debate. Why are you running for the U.S. Senate? Why do you think you'll be a better senator than your opponent? And then I sat back and I listened to these two gentlemen talk and question each other for 45 minutes. And that's not an exaggeration, for 45 minutes before I felt I needed to step in and ask my second question. You will never, ever see anything like that happen again. And I'm I'm tickled to death that this show, which has been my baby for the past 15 years, started off with such a radical departure from the norms of political coverage.
Here's a bit of that exchange.
And yet you voted against their pay raise. And you talked about the Osprey helicopter. You know, you voted against Black Hawk helicopters, C-130 transports, satellite planes, radar, smart bombs, Tomahawk missiles. You know, all these tools that we're using to fight the war on
terrorism. That's odd. I remember being very instrumental in getting the Black Hawk helicopters for our National Guard right here in this state. I intervened specifically to do that. And let me talk about these defense bills that he said I voted against pay raises. Well, you know what these bills are. They're huge bills loaded with thousands of provisions. And in each one, whenever I voted against the defense bill, I said right in there, I supported the pay raise. And in fact, one of the reasons I voted against the bill is because we weren't doing other things for the troops that I just mentioned. They weren't getting adequate housing. They weren't getting adequate help for their families. And so I thought the priorities were wrong. So when you can't lump the two together. You can't say you voted against weapon systems and troops. The fact is you got to make choices. And I say every weapon system, it's a relic of the Cold War, like that Project Elf that we finally got rid of in Wisconsin. Those things needed to go. And I voted against those bills until we started getting our priorities straight. And I have never voted in any one of those defense authorizations bills or appropriations bills specifically against a pay raise. That's simply not true.
And that's how this program began in October of 2004. One of the other things that we were able to do, and we continue to do, and one of the things we pride ourselves on here at Wisconsin Public Radio and Route 51 is developing partnerships with community groups and organizations throughout the region. One of those groups is A Walk in Their Shoes, and Colin's on the line and has a question for you or a comment. Colin, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for all you've done. I'm sorry, but I'm choking up because you've been amazing, Glenn. And
well, Colin, you've been pretty amazing, too.
Well, my heart goes out to you and your family. So I'm going to cut it off because I'm too emotional. But I'd give you a big hug if I was in the room with you.
Well, thanks, Colin.
I know that you would. And Colin is... He's an educator in Edgar, and he has brought some amazing people into North Central Wisconsin specifically to share their messages with his students, and they ended up sharing their messages with the entire community. The Tuskegee Airmen, the folks from the Japanese internment camps who were involved in barbed wire baseball, which was the subject of one of our shows. And then we had Carlotta Walls Lanier of the Little Rock Nine, who, when she was a young teenager, helped integrate schools in the South while white mobs confronted her, and the President Eisenhower called in the National Guard. To hear that kind of story come to life and hear it from the words of the people who actually experienced it, that's invaluable. And Colin and the Walking in Their Shoes program has been really instrumental in doing that.
Colin, thank you so much for calling in.
Well, thank you, and sorry to get so emotional, but it's because of you guys and the promotion and the help with it that has made it to take off and be sustainable here in central Wisconsin. Again, Glenn, sending thoughts and prayers to you, your family. And, again, thank you, thank you.
Thanks, Colin. Let's go to Catherine in Lake Tomahawk. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes. I just am calling to say thank you, Glenn, and I'm so glad I get the chance to say thank you. And it's especially for your fierce and deeply kind advocacy of people and nature in our community. Thank you.
Catherine, thank you so much. And I love the juxtaposition of fierce and deeply kind. You don't hear those two words in the same sentence very often. Thanks so much for your words.
You're welcome.
Over the years, we've already talked about this, but music has played a large role not only on this program, but obviously your life. Tell us about some of the favorite musical guests that we've had on the program.
Oh, my. Corky Siegel, a great blues harmonica player who I watched him as a kid growing up in the Chicago area. We had him as a guest, and Randy Sabine has to be among the list of my all-time favorites. We're listening to him right now do a song that was written by a blues man. I think it was Blind Willie McTell, but I might be wrong. The song is What is the Soul of a Man? And here's Randy with his violin and me with my guitar, and that's it. Here we go.
Voice. I don't know where you got that from, Glenn, but that was great.
Well, I was born with it. Randy actually stopped by my house up in Merrill the day before. We cooked some shrimp linguine and had a little wine and actually rehearsed a little bit before we did the show on Thursday morning. And he is a treasure in North Central Wisconsin, but we have so many local musicians, John Altenberg and Mitch Vigood and the crew with Johnny and the Motones been our guest. You had Mitch on not too long ago, and Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, the entire string band revival that's been led by Art Stevenson in a lot of ways down in Stevens Point. We're really blessed in this listening area to have those folks, and that's an important part of the Route 51 show, is sharing their music with our listeners.
And we've also shared music from legendary folk people that actually have come through here to here in Wausau. Not too long ago, we had a conversation with that legendary performer as well as a former congressman. How did that turn out, Glenn?
Peter Yarrow, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Congressman Dave Obey, who represented this area for 41 years, they're actually music buds, which is something a lot of people don't know, but Dave is an accomplished harmonica player. And Peter has made one of his goals the elimination of bullying in our schools, because he sees things that are happening to kids. And he sees that same behavior reflected in our politics and in the way we relate to each other once these kids grow up and get into elected office. So we had Dave with his harmonica, and we had Peter with his guitar, and we were talking about the record that he put together with Peter, Paul, and Mary called Don't Laugh at Me. And as we're talking, you will hear me pot up that song, and then you will hear Peter and David join it live in the studio, and it's magic. It's the kind of thing that you can only hear on live radio.
And we must understand that, and you'll see this just as we're talking about it now, we must make sure that those children that are in the schools do not reiterate the cruelty that we see in general society now. And if we start them early enough, we can succeed. And music can be a big help to doing that.
Don't laugh at me. Don't call me names. Don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, they're all the same. Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me.
E-flat.
I'm the beggar on the corner. You pass me on the street.
And I wouldn't be out here begging if I had enough to eat.
And don't think I don't notice
that our eyes never meet.
Don't laugh at me.
Don't call me names.
Don't get
your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes,
we're all the same.
Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me.
I'm fat, I'm thin, I'm short, I'm tall,
I'm deaf, I'm blind. Hey, aren't we all?
Don't laugh at me.
Don't call me names.
Don't get your pleasure from my
pain.
In God's eyes,
we're all the same.
Someday we'll all have
perfect
wings. Don't laugh at me.
That was probably one of the most poignant segments that we've ever done on this program. I remember just being stunned at that time.
Absolutely.
We're going to go back to the phones. Larry from Stevens Point would like to talk with you, Glenn. Larry.
Hi, Glenn. I think you know who this is, but I just wanted to thank you again for all the years. I think that your reporting and journalism has been the best and completely honest and straightforward. In addition, the debate that you talked about is the best debate I've ever heard or seen in my life, and I wish they could all be the same. But wish you the best, and we're going to miss you.
Larry, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry, for the call. We'll be back right after this on Route 51.
Support for WPR comes from Glass Nickel Pizza, 21 years of employee and customer-inspired pizzas made from scratch at 8 Wisconsin locations, dedicated to sustainability practices and community support. GlassNickelPizza.com.
WPR is proud to sponsor Gina Chavez Saturday, February 9th at the Lucille Tech Center for the Arts in Spencer. Join Chavez for a bilingual celebration of song in Latin and North American genres. Chavez and her band will take listeners on a passionate musical journey through the Americas in English and Spanish. Details at WPR.org/central. Music from South Beach Chamber Ensemble. Michael Andrews and his gang come here every July for a special broadcast here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Route 51 with our guest Glenn Moberg. You can join the conversation at 800-780-9742. Glenn, we're going to go to the phones right now, and Mary from Mozenia has been waiting for a while. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, what prompted me to call in, Glenn, was your comment about that debate that Larry mentioned, too, and about how you sat back and listened. And I think that's what makes your show, has made your show so engaging over the years, is that you are a really good listener. And you're right, that kind of thing probably can't happen anymore. And it's not just because of our current culture, but it's a good testament to you as a good listener. You know, sometimes you have to turn off the shows when people are shouting over each other. And so my question for you is, what advice would you have for other people who are hosting shows to set a similar tone that you've set over the years in your program where you listen to people?
Well, it's the same advice that I give not only to talk show hosts but reporters, is be a listener. We have reporters who are very enamored with themselves, particularly the ones who come right out of school, and they've got Hollywood in their eyes, and they can all speak really well. But if you can't listen really well, you're probably going to miss the most important part of a story. So when you get to a scene, if you're a reporter, and this is the only advice I'll give to young reporters today, is open your eyes. Open your ears, and if you see or hear something going on there that isn't what you expected before you got there, pay attention to it, because that's probably the most important part of the story.
Thanks for the call, Mary. Alan from Madison is on the line. Alan.
Mr. Moberg, I remember a time I was listening to Mr. Moberg on. I was listening to him on the air in the old days when he was spinning wax, as we used to say. But I was listening very closely, and I could not understand some lyrics to a song. And he gracefully sent me those lyrics. Oh, by the way, the first name is Charlie, not Alan.
Charlie Zahner. How are you
there, Mr.? Oh, Glenn, it's you.
That's absolutely
right,
it, man. Charlie Zahner has been a lifelong friend of mine, and that started back in the Chicago area where I was a disc jockey, and I was playing an old Bessie Smith song, on the radio, and he wanted the lyrics. I wrote them out. We got together, and we have been friends ever since, and that's a long time. Charlie, thanks so much for calling.
Sir.
Charlie, thanks.
Absolutely, and I'm bringing the guitar up.
Well,
thank you, Glenn.
And I'm looking forward to it.
Glenn, take us for a walk in the woods.
Well, this is a story that we did with the DNR and the secretary at the time, Matt Frank, in which they put a radio collar on a hibernating bear, and I got to pick up and hold a bear cub, which was an experience I'll never forget.
Hey, Tim, how are you doing?
Good.
DNR Secretary Matt Frank greets the dozen or so people at a Marathon County trailhead, happy to be out of the office.
This is one of the best parts of the job, just getting out and seeing what everybody's working on.
What everybody's working on is replacing the radio collar on a 12-year-old female black bear that's hibernating about a mile into the woods. It's part of a study headed by Dave McFarlane, research scientist with the DNR.
For the last 20 years, we've had bears moving progressively further south. What are the movement corridors? What are the likely barriers?
McFarlane's research has shown that the bears are not only on the move, there are more of them. UW-Madison Wildlife Ecologist Tim Van Dielen says the numbers are much higher than earlier estimates.
When he predicted there were 25 or 30,000 bears, the DNR number was closer to 12 or 15,000.
The hibernating mother is at the southern edge of the state's recognized bear habitat. She was discovered 2 years ago by local hunter Terry Lane.
I was out here rabbit hunting one day and I heard something squealing, making a noise like a puppy. It turned out to be a bear, and then I knew there must have been a newborn in there.
2 years later, the bear is back and is once again a mother, nursing four newborn cubs. Anesthesiologist Joe Bodavis prepares the tranquilizer.
We'll actually use a pole that's about 6 feet long, and we'll attach a syringe to it.
The makeshift group of scientists, hunters, and volunteers trudges through high snow into a clear-cut region of the forest, led by UW-Madison researcher Carl Malcolm.
Those young clear cuts are great denning places.
The party pushes through the spindly growth to the den where the groggy mother lays with her four cubs. Bodavis plunges the syringe into her side, and soon she's asleep. The tiny cubs are pulled away and handed one at a time to the volunteers. They look like cuddly teddy bears. They sound like banshees. DNR Secretary Matt Frank takes two of the frightened cubs and holds them close inside his jacket to calm them down.
Oh, this is what it's all about. How fantastic it is that we have a state where we have a wild bear population like this that is thriving and that we're learning more about through these kind of research efforts.
You ever held two bear cubs like this out in the wild before?
This is a first, and I got to tell you, it's a thrill. It's an absolute thrill.
In the den, as Bo Davis shaves the bear's neck.
Yeah, that's what radio is all about. You know, the thing that made that piece is bringing you the sound of those bears from the wild into your living room. And one of the things that makes radio so powerful is because you have to supply the pictures with your own imagination. Charles Osgood, who's worked for both TV and radio for CBS, once said he prefers radio because the pictures are better. It's because you, the listener, are providing those pictures for our words.
And you brought those words to life for us for the past 15 years at Wisconsin Public Radio. Glenn, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for the honor of working together with you over the past 15 years.
Thank you, Rick. It means more to you than you can imagine.
And that's a wrap. That's a wrap for Glenn. And it's been 15 years since he started here at Wisconsin Public Radio of November of 2003, and we've been blessed ever since. Thanks to Joy Ratchkramer for producing today's program and on-air production. John Altberg composed the Route 51 theme. Special music today from Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, Jerry Schmidt, Peter Riaro, and Dave Obie, Randy Spean, and of course, Glenn Moberg. I'm Rick Ryer. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
I'm here in Wausau, Wisconsin, USA. I should be happy as a man can be. I can hunt and I can hike and I can fish and I can bike, and in the wintertime I can ski. But I'm staring at my shoes at the Bull Falls Brew, and I know why I'm feeling blue. WA USA, and the only thing missing is you. Wausau, Wisconsin is a faraway place, just above the tension line. They've got concerts on the square and the Wisconsin Valley Fair. We'll watch a ball game from the third base line. There's a cool northern breeze, and they're making lots of cheese on the farms where the cows go moo. W-A, USA, and the only thing missing is you. I'm gonna set the clock on the 400 block to Central Wisconsin time. I drew some pictures, you should see them at the Woodson Art Museum of this place above the tension line. I'm gonna write a little letter, and I hope that when you get her, you'll join me here in Old Wazoo. W-A-USA, and the